Hello and welcome to the November 2nd, 2021 Credentials Community Group meeting. Today, we are looking at Wyoming's approach to digital identity, and we're also going to look at a couple work items that have been new requested work items. I'm going to put the agenda in the link. Here we go. So that's our agenda. Okay. IP note. Anyone can contribute in these calls. However, all substantive contributors to any CCG work item must be members of the CCG with full IPR agreement signed. Anyone can join the CCG. You need to just create a W3 account, which is free. And then you need to sign and agree to the W3C Community Contributor License Agreement. Call notes. These minutes and an audio recording of everything said on this call are archived at the minutes meeting. Put the link here. And Manu, when we do announcements, I might give you a moment to give an update on some of the minute stuff.
Will do.
We use IRC to cue speakers during the call as well as to take minutes. IRC or this Jitsi chat if you open on the side. If you have, if you would like to add yourself to the queue, just type Q plus. I'll show you an example. It's Q the plus sign, and that will add you to the queue. If you want to remove yourself from the queue, you can type Q minus. If you want to make an optional note about what you want to speak about, you can type Q plus a note about my comment. You will see the chairs do some other commands. You don't need to worry about those in order to queue and put you on the record. Please be brief, so other folks can, queue and comment, as well. You can always queue yourself again. So note this meeting is held by voice, not IRC, so off-topic comments are subject to deletion from the record. All right, scribe selection. Do we have anyone volunteering to be a scribe before I go down the scribe list? Okay. Let's see. Regular scribes, we have Chris Winzecki, Dave Lonely, Dimitri, are you on here? No? Okay. Erica Connell? No Erica today. Nate, I don't think Nate's here. Kalia? Are you here? Jared Leonard? Is that correct? I thought that was a different name. Ryan Grant? Ryan, I see you're here. I know you've done a lot of scribing recently. Did we not update it? Would you be willing to scribe today?
I would be willing to scribe.
Thanks. Ryan, can you just type into the Q scribe plus? That way, because I see you have a different, maybe earlier. There we go. Okay. Great. Excellent. So introductions. Do we have anyone new on the call who would like to introduce themselves? Just Q plus, or if you are, audio only, go ahead and speak up. Okay, so no new.
Hey, sorry about that. I'm just getting used to the new controls. This is Daza Greenwood. I'm new on this call, and I think I'm here for the agenda item on the Wyoming Personal Digital Identity Act.
Yeah, thanks, Daza, for joining us. Is there anyone else new on the call that would like to introduce themselves? And if you're a speaker, you can introduce yourself or wait to do introduction later. Okay, I'll go on to reintroductions. If it's okay, I'd love to put you on the hot seat, Christopher. It's been a while since you've been here, and yet you've contributed a lot to this community. So would you be willing to do a reintroduction? Christopher, we're not able to hear you, or I'm not able to hear you. I don't know if others are.
No, I can't hear any audio.
It looks like you're unmuted, but I'm not sure. So maybe we can figure that out, because certainly we'll need to have you speak to present.
So, Heather, it might be a Safari unmute bug. So, Christopher, you might try a different browser, unfortunately, like Chrome, Chromium. Or you might just try rejoining, but if it happened once, it'll probably happen again.
This is a known bug that we have, and I don't know, Manu, do you want to pop on? We can like just jump ahead to maybe the any announcements, and you can hand it over to you to give you some updates about the minutes and things.
Sure, sure. We can cover some announcements. So let's see. Infrastructure announcements. I've got two classes of announcements. The DID spec kind of update on what's going on there, and then infrastructure. So let's do infrastructure first. The minutes publication infrastructure has been broken slightly for the last couple of months. It had to just do with an email address that we were using and some new security stuff that Google had put into place with Gmail. That bug is now fixed. So when anyone that is preparing the minutes goes through our standard process of minutes publication, you no longer have to manually send the email out to the mailing list. The minutes will be auto-emailed out to the mailing list. So that's working again. And I believe that brings all of our infrastructure, Modulo, the Jitsi things I'm about to mention, up to, I believe, like 100% operation, meaning that, like, our infrastructure should be back to where it was, like everything should be working again. Modulo, the Jitsi stuff. Okay, so that's that. With respect to Jitsi, it has been working more or less for most people that join, but as we saw with Christopher right now, there are bugs with the way Safari has implemented some of WebRTC and bugs with the way that Firefox and Brave are handling some of the WebRTC things that cause people to not be able to come off mute. But still hear everyone, and so on and so forth, right? Okay, so we've had about, you know, a year of quote-unquote stability where at least we knew what the bugs were and all that kind of stuff. Over the Christmas break, the upcoming, like, end of December break, we're going to try updating the Jitsi software. So this either results in old bugs being fixed and new bugs appearing. Hopefully this time we'll fix some of the outstanding bugs and we'll have a much better experience, but we'll see. There's also kind of a general question to the community, and I'd love to see people queuing for this. You know, what are the top infrastructure features you would like to see? And I think we're going to try and prioritize, if folks are okay with it, like things that we can help people that are running meetings. So chairs and editors and just kind of prioritize those features. And then, of course, you know, ensuring that we've got broad kind of support for the rest of the community, like joining and fixing the unmuting bugs and that kind of stuff. So right now the infrastructure priorities are upgrade Jitsi to try and fix, you know, some of these bugs just because they've been there for a while. And then try and implement the auto scribe feature so that we have automatic scribing, driven by, you know, speech recognition. There's some concerns around that, of course, with respect to, you know, voice prints and things like that. And some people don't want that. And I think we have some solutions there. And just in general, like, you know, what are things that you wish were easier, like putting together agendas and sending them out? Just to give those working on the infrastructure some ideas on new infrastructure that we can put into place that's going to help people more efficiently run meetings and send minutes out and that kind of stuff. So that's it for the infrastructure update. The other update is DIDCore. So as many of you know, DIDCore received some formal objections from W3C members. There has been a lot of back and forth on the advisory committee mailing list about it, about what's happening next, you know, all that kind of stuff. The good news is that things have kind of calmed down a bit. And for those of you that don't know what's going on, I'm going to put a link in here, summary FAQ of DIDCore formal objections. There's kind of a, I put that FAQ together. It's my view of the situation, just to be clear. It may change into kind of the working group's position, but that hasn't happened yet. So it may be biased. But if you wanted to read up on kind of what's going on and what the next steps are, you know, it's there. So the good news is that we're kind of the, well, good bad news is, a lot of the points have been made and written down and communicated, and we're in a bit of a holding pattern until, something called a formal objection council, is created to deal with the formal objection. Just to underscore, this is an exceedingly rare case, to get the types of formal objections we did at the time that we got them, is exceedingly rare. If you have access to the advisory committee mailing list, if you're a W3C member, anyone that's a W3C member, even if you work for a W3C member, has access to that list. There's a bunch of data that I pulled on past voting history and how the votes come in and who objects and who doesn't and all that kind of stuff. All the data is pointing to, like, this has never really happened before in the way that it's happened. But, you know, I think it's on a good path. It's just going to take time, for it to be resolved. And that's that for the DIDCore update. So I'm going to stop talking now and see if there are any questions, comments, concerns.
Thanks, Manu. I just cued myself because I think everyone knows I like to be organized and how we collect feedback. And so I just quickly put together issues list, CCG issue for Jitsi feedback. And awesome. I would ask that we could use, if people have comments, please cue yourself and talk about it now, but then also put it on that. Just make a comment on that. That'll make it easy for us to track it and resolve it. And Carrie, you're up next.
Yeah, I mean, this is the time, let me know, but if there's like one request that I have for the task force, it would be to be able to search for our minutes in the Scribe tool. That would be great. Because right now, I think we have to do that pretty manually.
Yeah, Carrie, we've got that somewhere. It's like that. I know I've seen that request. It's like buried in some infrastructure repo issues list. So one of the things I will do is go find all the previous infrastructure requests that were removed from the main CCG issues list into the infrastructure repo and make sure that those get not like lost or slipped through the cracks, which has been one of my concerns. So yeah, Manu, that was also one of the things I wanted to like just do like a sweep through to make sure that these infrastructure requests that were not being tracked in the main CCG issues folder didn't like get lost.
Yeah, plus one to that. Carrie, could you explain that a bit more? I'm trying to understand. Do you mean like have a search bar at the top of all of our minutes where you could type in like VC API or like a keyword and then get minutes back that contain that keyword?
Yeah, in the Scribe tool, there's like a calendar search and you can choose a date and then it pulls up the minutes, but it only does it for the CCG. It doesn't do it for the task force.
Got it.
Crystal so it needs to know the other meeting codes, like the VC education and VC API codes for the meeting folders, I think.
Yep. That's all. Got it. Yep. Agreed. We need that.
All right. Thanks, both of you.
Cool. Okay. So I want to circle back now because, hopefully Christopher is on a new browser and
I am.
Awesome. Great. Can hear you. Good to hear your voice. Would you like to do a reintroduction?
Sure. My name is Christopher Allen and I am executive director and principal architect for Blockchain Commons. I joined the CCG, I want to say that it was 6 years ago. I got invited as an invited expert and to the verifiable credentials task force and working group, and then this was, you know, basically only meeting once or twice a year, and joined by Joe. Senior moment,
Kim,
we basically, you know, started doing the weekly meetings and, tried to do a lot of these different types of processes for that. And, so the latest on that is that, did not run for renewal of my co-chairmanship a year and a half ago so that I could really concentrate on doing code. Blockchain Commons has been doing a lot of small projects in decentralized identity in the area of things like the ID Onion and some other what I would call trustless DID methods. We've also been doing a lot of work in the wallet side. You know, how can we, you know, have better security of things like, our, you know, our fundamental keys, you know, how do we use things like, Bitcoin's HD keys in areas where HD keys don't work, like 25519, you know, how do we protect these, very sensitive, data objects. And then finally, you know, have been working and trying to figure out how to bring some of the best blockchain technology from the trustless side, Bitcoin, Bitcoin Taproot, Ethereum, et cetera, to the DID community in some new ways that are, more trust preserving. That's it. Thank you. Nice to be back.
Thanks, Chris. It sounds like you've been doing a lot of good work.
Thank you.
Okay. I'd like to now touch base about some work items. So I'm going to put the link in here. So I want to give an update. You might remember from a few weeks ago, maybe a month ago, we had that work item extravaganza. Last week I did go through and create repos for all of the approved work items. I want to just, mention one. I still need some information in one of them. This is the DIDTZ method. And I just need someone who's on that project to give me the correct, co-lead for Francois. I could not find him on GitHub in order to be able to add him as the co-lead on that, and the link that they had on there for him, it just wasn't working. So Wayne, I see you're also co-lead on that. I don't know if you can update that thread with his correct
I can get on that too. Yeah, the Francois Vavine. Okay, I'll look for it, but yeah, as far as I know, he's still interested in working on it.
Yeah, no, I wasn't questioning whether it was or not. I just like the at Francois Green Gravity failed. So,
okay,
and then there's
sorry.
A whole bunch of Francois Greens, and so I had no idea which one it was. So, Yeah, if you can just respond to that thread, like what it is, I'll be able to finish completing what needs to be done. We can close this work item just because I love closing work items.
We'll do. We'll do.
Awesome. Thanks, Juan. Okay. All right. So we've got two new work items on here, that I asked for the leads to be able to join us today. So the first one is cooperative credentials. And do we have, okay, Nick, Angus?
Yes.
Okay, excellent. Can I pass it over to you guys to kind of tell us about what this is and then query any questions from the community?
Sure. Thanks so much, Heather. That's great. And I'd just like to also introduce, while I'm on, Angus McLeod, who I think I see in the list of members here as well.
So, yes, hello. I'm also
there
here.
There we
as
go.
Well.
There we go. There's Angus
from Australia.
Exactly. So it's very late. It's very, very late indeed for Angus at the moment. So thanks, Angus, for coming on. I'm not sure. Do we have anybody from Fairbnb.coop on the call? I don't think we do. We're a consortium of three cooperatives. Cooperatives cooperate with each other, as is the clue's in the name. One of our principles as cooperatives is to work with other cooperatives. And one of the areas where we're particularly excited is in the area of verifiable credentials for cooperatives. Basically, the idea that we're talking about here, we're bringing to W3C, is common cooperative membership. So there are something like 1.2 billion cooperative members globally. 3 million of those are in cooperatives. There are 3 million cooperatives globally as well. They tend to be very small organizations. It makes sense, we think, if we're wired to cooperate with each other, for us to try and do things technically in a sensible way, and not, as we have been, being dominated by the large federated identity providers, Facebook, Google, and so forth. So we think there's an opportunity for co-ops to be more joined up as a movement, and particularly as there's the emergence of a new breed of platform cooperatives. I'll say something a bit about the cooperative that I come from, then I'll hand over to Angus. I come from a cooperative called Resonate, which is a fair play music streaming cooperative. Basically, we're owned by our members, our listeners, our artists, and our workers. And we basically, democratically constituted, co-owned, and we provide a music streaming platform, one day, which may compete with Spotify. But for the moment, it's very, very small. But we're trying to grow an identity, and respectful, privacy-respecting identity is a key part of our agenda. We've found that many other cooperatives try to do this, but struggle to coordinate technically. So we think there's an opportunity to work with W3C in a joined up way on this. Angus, could you say something about Pavilion?
Yeah, sure. So thanks, Nick. So Pavilion we're a software developers cooperative at the moment, primarily. And we do a lot of work, particularly with Discourse, which is an open source forum software, and also some with WordPress as well. But like Nick said, we are very keen to collaborate. Well, all cooperatives are keen to collaborate with other cooperatives, and to share resources, and also potentially to share members as well, in a privacy respecting way. And so as a result, we've been looking at verifiable credentials for some time now, and Resonate and Pavilion have worked on one project involving verifiable credentials so far. And as part of that project, we actually developed an open source plugin for the Discourse community software framework that allows you to use a presentation of a verifiable credential in order to gain access to a group on a Discourse forum. I'll just post a link in the chat. And we'll be adding to that project as part of a second project that we're doing together. So along with Fairbnb, Resonate and Pavilion are working on, as Nick just mentioned, a cooperative credential that will, in addition to building on top of some of that existing work that we've done, look to actually define a verifiable credential for common cooperative membership.
So thanks, Angus. So so let's have a look at the work item proposal that we have. We're very much modeling this on the work. Can I share my screen here, Heather? Is this okay?
Yes, you can. Yes, perfect.
Okay, right. So there's a site we have set up called coopcreds.com. Thanks to Angus for setting this up. You can browse the more about the project on there. So if you want to find out more about what we're trying to do there. And the work item though is this one. And what we're proposing is something akin to the great work being done by the VC Edu task force. It's a task force, isn't it? VC Edu, yeah. What we would hope to become is something like that, where we have a number of cooperatives joining together, looking at firstly refining and standardizing cooperative use cases, in particular this core use case around cooperative membership, the idea of portability of membership of cooperatives, but doing that in a privacy respecting way. So you can bring your cooperative membership easily from one cooperative to another without asking for too much information each time you do that. So we think as cooperatives, we can do that in a way that, say, you know, platform capitalists can't do, because, you know, platform capitalism is wired to compete with each other. Co-ops do things in a more, let's say, privacy respecting and cooperative way. So basically what we're trying to do is to look at refining the use cases, understanding better which other task forces may have similar use cases or challenges. For example, in VC Edu, and the case of qualifications is something which comes up in cooperatives all the time. If we could reach out to them and basically work collaboratively with the VC Edu side of the house, and we think we could learn a lot and benefit from the cooperative sector. And maybe the cooperative sector could help out in particular around ecosystem governance, because co-ops have done a lot of work in the area of governance, cooperative, peer-to-peer governance structures, democratic principles, the ethics of collaboration. So we may be able, I'm not saying we can teach you guys anything, but maybe we can help out with some of the governance structures around those technical activities. So that's really what this is about. We're desperately trying to break the mold of dependency on major identity providers, in particular where we try to leverage common cooperative membership. We think there's a huge danger that as cooperatives, reach out to each other to try and share their memberships and their user bases, that they do that in the wrong way and create points of aggregation of information, which put their members at risk. So we're keen to take the guidance, the best practice that's being shown in here in this community and in the work done in the VCU Edu area to get best practice established across the cooperatives and to do that in a joined up way. We have a couple of bodies who can help us with that. We have the International Cooperative Alliance, the ICA, which carries the co-op brand. You can look at the cooperative principles and values there. But we also have a thing called Platform Co-op. There's a conference coming up shortly, and that is really specially designed for the digital age, platform cooperatives. And that is, if you like, the overarching business, where we hope we're working with them to get the overarching business governance around this sorted out. So we provide a bridge between the technical community here and the technical leadership shown here, and the cooperative business leadership in platform.coop. I'll stop there because I think that's probably enough detail. If you want to know more, just reach out to us. But any questions?
Yeah, great. We've got a queue here. And before we go for the queue, Bob, I'm going to ask, can we push your work item to next week? I just want to make sure we have enough time for this one and our main event. Manu, over to you.
I'm thrilled about this work item. It's, absolutely fantastic. I can't underscore how excited I am about it. What both of you may not be aware of is that the verifiable credential specification started out as an attempt to try and help artists publish music online in a way that was independent, that avoided, you know, the existing identity providers, allowed them to set their own prices, all that kind of stuff. So it's great to see this happen. That happened first, and then it was used for education, and then it, you know, was started being used for other stuff. So plus one, the music side of this and independent publishing side of it. The other really, great thing is the use of, co-ops in figuring out a way to get all the co-ops to work together to issue these types of credentials. I think that's a really, laudable goal. Really wonderful, that's also happening. So just wanted to say some words of encouragement and say you're among friends, and I'm really personally very interested in seeing this work succeed.
Oh, well, we are honored. Thank you so much. Yeah. There are loads of potential use cases. It gets so exciting. I think one of our problems is keeping the focus going at the moment on the core stuff. So thank you.
Great. I cued myself because I just wanted a plus one. The work definitely is something interesting. From my perspective, as creating commons and interactions. And I want to pass it to Adrian. I just want to warn you, Adrian, if you're going to go, like, I'm not going to allow you to derail this conversation with the how it's been derailed in the past. So you are welcome to comment, but please stay within the swim lane so we can stay on track.
Okay. My project has been on modeling patient cooperatives. It has the same goals as you do in terms of privacy preservation. One of the questions that I have for you in your conception is, do you see the co-ops acting as notaries, as part of a federation? In other words, issuing credentials as issuers themselves?
Yes.
Or are they co-signing credentials that people bring and they're just acting as notaries? In other words, are they primarily notaries or are they primarily verifiers of facts?
Yeah, I might actually answer that
separate things.
I might actually answer that one. So our initial conception of this is we, as Nick mentioned, we're talking with platform.coop, which is an industry body for platform cooperatives. And we're looking for an industry body like that to play the role of issuer and verifier initially, rather than that be distributed. So we're thinking of having a single centralized body is issuer and verifier initially, but open to other ideas on that front.
Well, that wasn't my question. In other words, the Edu co-op, the Edu project, for example, spends a lot of time trying to figure out how to standardize an educational credential, the contents, the data model. A notary is somebody that doesn't read the contract, doesn't read the credential itself, but simply notarizes the identity. So a notary can serve an identity blinding function, for instance, to some extent, if that's one of your interests, without ever actually looking at the contents of the verifiable credential. They're doing purely an identity-related job as a notary, right? They're looking at your driver's license and saying, yeah, that's the signature on this verifiable credential, or that's the subject of this verifiable credential. And those are completely different things.
Got it.
And I'm primarily interested in the notarization use case for our project. I was just asking in general, I think it's appropriate given your presentation to ask which of those two you think is likely that you'll be doing.
Got it. Yeah, I mean, at the moment, we haven't really looked at very much at that concept, but, I'd be interested in learning more about what you're doing, actually. We might, I don't think we mentioned, but we actually already have a community set up where we're starting to discuss some of these issues. So I might invite you to that, and you can add your thoughts on how we could use that in the process here, potentially.
I would be delighted. I'll put my email in the notes.
That's great. Fantastic. Thank you. Yeah, I think we see, I say we're trying to bootstrap this, in the most, you know, we believe that we need communities at scale to try this out. So we need, you know, some example use cases, which we kick off with. We're looking at one around sustainable music tourism as a bootstrap use case. So we can actually get to try this stuff and show it rather than just talk about it. With a real community, with a reasonably exciting use case around music touring. So we've got something of that sort going. But we expect there to be many different scenarios, and including notarization scenarios, including self-issuing scenarios, where there is an ecosystem of issuers and verifiers. But the framework we're providing for this is through our industry body, and technically aligning with best practice in W3C. So we don't want to reinvent the wheel here. Let's learn the best what's going on in other communities and make sure we steal that. So Adrian, that'd be very useful. Thank you.
Great. Okay. We've got one more person on the queue, and then we need to get to the main event. So Christopher, over to you.
Yeah, I'll keep it brief. I've been working on trying to make sure that some new things in the DAO area are not solely, Ethereum and token based and all that kind of stuff. And there's a lot of interest on the DAO side in privacy using something called proof of personhood. Or POP. There is a group that is beginning to meet later this month, I think on the 15th, on some of the risks that we've begun to discover around some of the anonymous proof of personhood privacy things and some of the adversaries and how to work around them. So if you're planning on doing proof of personhood or something of that nature or that kind of privacy, you may want to have one of your team members be involved and just contact me, and I'll be glad to connect you to this emerging threat analysis. Thank you.
That's fantastic, because that's exactly an area of cooperative voting is one of the key areas. It's one member, one vote. So, proof of personhood is a key part of that. And it is a challenge, for digital, platform cooperatives. That moving the cooperatives were started in 1844. People showed up in a room and they voted. Now things are rather different. So, it is really important that, we have, privacy respecting and safe solutions to that. Thank you. Thank you, Christopher.
Sure.
Great. Okay, so Nick, there is support by the community for this work item. So the way our process works is we start a 7-day waiting period to allow for anyone to make additional comments on the thread. And once that 7 days is up, I will go ahead and create a work item and notify you guys, and you can officially start in the repo. I want to hand it over to the main event. I apologize. I had hoped we were going to have more time for you guys, but I would like to pass this over to Christopher Allen and Claire Sullivan and Daza Greenwood, and I don't know if you have other folks from your team, but over to you. And Nick, you might want to unshare your screen.
Okay, I'll start. So people who have been members of the community group for a long time know that we have been tussling from a technological perspective around the use of the intersection of our technology and law, in particular around it being associated with property law and intellectual property law, which we've discovered, early on, 4 or 5 years ago, is problematic. So as a community, as a technology community, we've really done a good job in the last couple of years of avoiding property law-like terms and some of the, technological hand waving to intellectual property. That being said, we haven't had a great answer on the law side to respond to that. I've been part of this Wyoming Identity Task Force subcommittee for a couple of years, and trying to figure out how we might be able to advance this topic. And we continue to have people come in, join the group, and go, oh well, it should be all under these type of property regimes, and then we educate people about the perils of that, and then we start all over again when the next person comes in. So a brilliant thing came up, and I think it was Claire who mentioned it first, was a new potential legal approach to this, which has to do with the area of agency law, and in particular something called principal authority. So the basic concept is that as a person, you have the right to have authority over certain types of things related, in regards to, your rights in the world, whether or not that's, your healthcare options, or you want advice on your care of your assets, things of that nature. You have the right to be able to delegate people to do and be able to handle those aspects of things. And you also have the right to say, no, I don't want you to have that. I don't want you to be my my advisor anymore. And that this is has some interesting differences that really are advantageous for us. And in some ways, I think one of the biggest insights is that in many cases where we think of something as being theft of an identity or theft of prop of some intellectual property that is our personal data, if we instead think of it as, an abuse of our authority and our right to delegate different aspects of our authority, or some kind of coercion against our authority, that allows for a much different way of approaching it that doesn't have us fall into property law type of approaches. So I wrote an article about that, which is here, and we've begun the process in Wyoming for framing that, and in particular, the section that is of relevance to this conversation is this one in the law. Personal digital identity means the intangible digital representation of, by, and for a natural person over which he has principal authority and through which he intentionally communicates or acts. So, this is was proposed last year. It was passed and signed by the governor. It doesn't have a lot of teeth to it at this point. So, it's just a concept that allows us to then build from. Now we can basically begin in the coming year to actually codify, where are these abuses of authority, and how can we allow individuals and the courts to be able to claw them back on behalf of individuals. This isn't to say the property law still won't be used and things of that nature, but it's a new tool in the legal arsenal on this. I would suggest that Claire speak next as the kind of the person who said, oh, here's a clue on how we might solve this problem.
Can everybody hear me?
Sure can.
Oh, great. Okay. So this really came out. The genesis of this was really Chris's work on self-sovereign identity. And I think when you look at it through that prism, you can see what we were trying to work with here. Like all legislation, there's a lot of compromise. And this was a surprisingly difficult definition to come up with because we had to navigate, as Chris said, the property issues, a whole range of things. I mean, if you haven't already guessed, I'm a lawyer. My area is cyber law with a specialty in digital identity. And digital identity, there's been a struggle with it as to its legal nature for a long time. I've written on it. And one of the things that in other parts of the world, it's primarily based on rights, but rights under US law are a very different thing. So this is one way of getting to the kind of heart of the issue that the individual has some control over this. And we brought in this aspect of principal authority. I do think that we have to be a little wary of not bringing in all the elements of agency into this. I mean, they can be useful in some regards, but it's really just for the definition that we've used the word principal authority for the moment. And then, as Chris said, this will need to be given some teeth with some protections embedded in legislation and some rights embedded to address the rights of the individual. So with that, I'll hand back to you, Chris, or to Daza to add anything that you want.
Daza, why don't you introduce yourself to, Claire, can you briefly say where you're from? And, You said you're a lawyer and whatever, and then Daza do the same.
Okay. So I'm with Georgetown University in Washington, D.C. Cyber law is my specialty, and I'm the assignment professor at Georgetown, and I'm also the center executive director of CyberSmart. That's the new NSF multidisciplinary cyber research center at Georgetown, and the University of Notre Dame is one of our partners.
Daza?
Okay. Hey, how's my audio?
Sounds great. Sounds great.
Okay. Yeah. Hi. I'm Daza Greenwood. I run a consultancy called civics.com and also a research tank at MIT called law.mit.edu. Very interested in digital identity and computational law. And I guess I would just add that for purposes of this group and, you know, maybe more generally, the headline for this statute may be, as good as the phrase principal authority is, it's really just the purpose and the function of this new statute. The word principal authority, you know, as Claire was suggesting, basically almost just as easily could have been control or dominion. There's reasons why we prefer principal authority. But the point is that that's a word in a statute, the purpose of which is to create a legal definition that you can use, that describes this aspect of digital identity that, sources from the individual themselves and remains, of, by, and for them. That is, you could say their sovereign identity, if you wanted to put it that way. But you'll notice that it's technology neutral. And so there can be other methods, for people to express this dimension of their identity. And the point is to create a building block so that when in other legal frameworks or even out in business and technology land, you want to refer to an identity that is that of the person and not one assigned to them, that there's now something you can cite to. And we're slowly growing out this definition in other parts of Wyoming law, and I'm starting to cite to it in legislation that I'm working on in other jurisdictions as well. So I think that's the sort of the headline news is there's a definition now, and you have it linked to in your notes. Thanks.
Awesome. So we've got a bunch of folks on the queue, and first up is Bob. Bob, over to you.
Yeah, this is a fascinating subject, particularly when it comes to delegation. I think I've got like 30-year-old patents that grappled with this issue of delegation of digital rights. I'm curious though, an issue that I dealt with back then and still have never really gotten comfortable with. You spoke of delegation. When you do delegation, what is it that is delegated? Are you delegating the identity or are you delegating rights which are associated with the identity?
Okay.
I'll let one of the lawyers answer.
It's rights associated with the identity.
Okay, great. Because I think that's a very important point for people to understand. I see a lot of technical conversations where people seem to think that an identity can be delegated, and I've always felt that that's just craziness. It's the rights that are associated with the identity, which is the proper subject of delegation.
The other element to that is that we wanted something that really flowed through not only private sector but also to public sector aspects here, and that's around the world. That's a key principle in a lot of identity systems, that an individual's digital identity cannot be delegated. So this definition has enough flexibility to deal with that.
Yeah, I'm just encouraging you to clarify that, because you find a lot of conversations where people speak of letting someone use my identity, when in fact that's craziness. There, you may allow them to use rights associated with your identity, but not to use your identity. Thank you. That's all.
Yeah, so I can speak a little to that. Another really important dimension of the definition as a whole is that this is an identity that a natural person, a human being, a live human being, communicates or acts through. So the source of activity occurring, the source of things happening through the digital identity, that's a personal digital identity, is the live human being. And they communicate or take other actions, including delegations or authorizations or whatever.
Okay, thanks for that clarification, Daza. Adrian, over to you.
So your innovation, if I could summarize it, was to switch from property law to agency law. And that then raises a question buried in antiquity of the CCG and the work on SSI, which is to label the entity related to the subject of the credential as the holder, as opposed to the controller. Now, I don't remember the reasons why that term holder was chosen. Maybe Christopher does. But the point is that would it be easier to explain self-sovereign identity and then write regulations on top of the laws that you're proposing if the holder was relabeled controller? Thank you.
I mean, I certainly have been, you know, I never intended the original SSI principles to be anything but a starting point for a larger conversation. There have been a couple of suggestions for changes, et cetera, but there just hasn't been sufficient consensus to try to move that forward. I would like to see that happen. I've seen there was a recent academic paper that took on six or seven other papers that reference my original 10 principles. I've kind of added five principles, maybe, you know, or at least five duties to the SSI work. So I would love to see some others who are interested in trying to take the SSI principles and move it to the next generation. And then from that, we can feed into things like questions about holder and controller and all of that. I mean, we were just really struggling 5 years ago, or, you know, in the area of, you know, we didn't want to say it owner. We were looking for anything but owner. You know, we came up with some, what I felt were decent compromises, so that a judge who sees, these words wouldn't go, oh, well, you know, he's the owner, that, well, that means it's property. Oh, well, that means he can sell it, give it away, and have no recourse on it. That's what we were really trying to avoid, was that a judge to look at this particular, word and then force it to fall into some aspect of law we didn't want to. That's it.
Thanks, Chris. Angus, you're up next.
Yeah, thanks. This is fascinating, actually. As well as being a software developer, I'm also a lawyer. And I did my thesis on the concept of property in law, actually. So one of the things that this has pricked for me was something that a previous speaker referred to, which is that what we're really talking about here in the principal agency relationship is a relationship of rights. And there's actually a very similar concept when you're talking about the concept of property in law, which is in common law jurisdictions anyway, people refer to property as a bundle of rights. Property is actually a relationship rather than a thing. This is one of the most common misconceptions about property in law. It is, in fact, a relationship rather than an object. So this is more of a question, really, in the sense that I'm wondering where this is coming from, in the sense that there seems to be, as Christopher was just referring to, definitely a terminological issue here underlying this to a certain extent, as in you want to find the right term to describe the relationships here. However, there's a related to that, but also somewhat separate from that, is the legal implications of that terminological question, which is, as Chris was just referring to, a judge looking at this in, if a judge is familiar with the nature of property as a bundle of rights, the upshot may be relatively similar to, you know, if you try and put this concept through a principal agency relationship. So I'm just wondering, you know, what the distinction between the terminological impetus and the kind of the legal impetus for this switch is. Someone could speak on that a little bit more.
Should I take that, Chris?
Yes, and then I had a final follow-up of a request to this community.
Okay, Angus, it's a difference between US law and Australian law. that's really the essence of it. I mean, you're absolutely right. In most countries in the world, property is a bundle of rights, and it kind of is in the US too, but there's a whole lot of statute law that impinges upon this that we had to navigate our way around. So that's why we didn't go down that road in terms of we wanted to avoid at all costs the property aspects for that reason.
I see.
It's probably that it doesn't foreclose there being a property interest in some data or other aspects of things that are identity. But as Claire said, the thing to keep an eye on is that's not the sole or primary or any basis for this statute. This one sources from other types of law, maybe more akin to human rights or civil liberties, but it's basically an independent right that emanates from the person themselves, irrespective of property. But it doesn't foreclose property schemes, because that's part of our world as well.
I see.
So I know you guys are trying to wrap up the call. I do have a request to this community from the technological side, which is begin to think about privacy issues as violations of authority, that they are either coercing authority or going against someone's authority, et cetera, in your thinking of this type of stuff, and feed that twist on looking at privacy from a coercion of authority point of view back to us, so that we might be able to look at, gosh, you know, that really fits well under agency law or doesn't, maybe falls under property law or whatever, so that we can begin to, create some use cases for putting some teeth into these issues. So that's my request back to the tech community, is to kind of put a twist on your thinking about privacy. Thanks.
Thanks, Christopher, Claire, and Daza. Christopher, that was a very provocative and intriguing ask. I like it. And if there's a work item, or if you want to invite the CCG to some kind of working session to help you guys gather more feedback on that, I would say I'm open to supporting that. Thank you again for coming today. So we're going to conclude for today. Thank you, everyone, for the great discussion. I'm very sorry, Bob, we couldn't talk about your work item today. We'll kick it for official discussion for next week. If you want to have informal conversation later today, that's fine as well. So thanks very much for attending the Credentials Community Group.
Thank you, everybody.